Jay Mariotti here, and I would love to love the 2019 baseball postseason. I really would. But as 2020 nears, it does not require perfect vision to see the same existential woes dragging down the sport, like an old car once considered cool, but now blown away on the sports superhighway by the NBA Bugatti and the NFL Bentley. When everything today is about attracting young eyeballs, the average age of a Major League Baseball viewer keeps rising to age 59 now, 59, with only 7% of the audience under 18. And young people have seen right through MLB's phony attempt to juice the baseballs, which has created a home run madness that mocks reality and proportion. Between relentless long balls, late starting times, and the usual snore-inducing length of the games, you can expect more of the same endless taffy pulls we saw last fall, recalling the 7-hour, 20-minute, 18-inning marathon between the Red Sox and the Dodgers in the World Series. True to form, baseball counters its identity crisis by throwing money at an advertising agency to produce this commercial, which falls in line with the Let the Kids Play campaign and other MLB generational pandering.
They say baseball isn't like it used to be. They're right. It's faster. Younger. Harder. Es una nueva generación. The kids are here. And we play loud.
Limonada Coco.
We are witnessing baseball history.
And yet, as long as Fox, ESPN, and Turner continue to feed the dying monster with billions in rights fees, MLB will be enabled to keep slumbering along as the number four sporting interest in America behind the NFL, the NBA, and that's right, college football, without having even a clue how to market the sport to generations that could prevent its extinction. We play loud? That isn't the idea. Try playing faster, leaner, more streamlined, with a 20-second pitch clock, we've been hearing about that forever, and a foul ball limit before a batter is called out. Sorry, I don't want 14 pitch at-bats anymore. 18 people said, boy, that's a classic at-bat. No, it's too long. If he keeps fouling the ball back, he's out. Okay? But the owners and Commissioner Rob Manfred can't see the future or even the present through the black and white haze of baseball's past. And though blessed this month with the youthful likes of Cody Bellinger, Aaron Judge, and Ronald Acuna Jr., you can expect more all-time ratings lows, even when so many slices and flashes of the postseason are compelling. Baseball deserves better, the players deserve better, and we deserve better than the fuddy-duddies who are sabotaging this sport year after sluggish year.
Welcome to Unmuted with Jay Mariotti,
the podcast devoted to making sports talk great again.
Few have made more impact in sports media than Jay, and certainly no one has been called more names. Some actually true. He's the fiercely independent lightning rod who has produced massive ratings for ESPN's Around the Horn, made powerful waves as a national and major market talk host, and ruled Chicago as a columnist for 17 years. Unmuted is a topical whirlwind that doesn't stop until all the news is analyzed. So here he is, back from his day job in Hollywood. For the next half hour or so. Or maybe 40 minutes, depending on the Lakers, Raiders, Trump, and Odell Beckham Jr.'s latest mood swing. The one, the only, Jay Mariotti.
So the feel-good quotient of the Atlanta Braves immediately goes south in the National League Divisional Series when the rock of the franchise, Freddie Freeman, went off on the $100 million young stud, Ronald Acuna Jr., for failing to run out a ball that he hit off the wall in that crushing Game 1 loss to the Cardinals. Freeman, as a revered veteran, probably should have refrained from public criticism, especially after a devastating loss when Mark Melancon and the bullpen failed the Braves against a Cardinals team that didn't deserve to win after multiple fielding errors. However, this was not the first time Acuna has sloughed off, recalling when manager Brian Snitker pulled him after a similar blow-off. Turmoil in Atlanta. Is this maybe where Snitker, nobody even knows who he is overmatched as the manager? And how deep might, I don't know, the pent-up tensions go in the clubhouse? You've got a veteran Freeman, a young kid Acuna, clashing in the middle of the postseason. Here were Freeman and Acuna with his interpreter, spewing emotions that likely have been building for a long time.
Playoffs are all about hustle all the time, full go. Acuna again, not getting out of the box. How disappointed are you in him when you have a conversation with Paul Masai? Hey, it's playoff time. You got to step it up.
Yeah, it is. It's frustrating, but I think you have that conversation once. Become a dead horse, kind of beat the dead horse after, you know, if you keep having that same conversation over and over again. I mean, you got to know that that was a mistake. So that can't happen in the playoffs. Can't happen in the regular season. So, unfortunately, that happened tonight.
After getting benched in the regular season for not hustling, how do you explain what happened tonight?
Después de lo que pasó durante la temporada regular, cuando Snicker te salió del juego, cuéntanos cómo explica lo que pasó esta noche.
Bueno, son cosas que pasan, son cosas que están en el juego. El que está en la banca, el que no le pasan esas cosas, ¿me entiendes? Podía hacer doble, pero son cosas que pasan.
I mean, these things happen. It's baseball, you know. Those are the kind of things that happen. You know, those things only, that's what I say, it's like, those things only happen to guys who are on the bench. You know, you get benched for that, so, but those things happen.
Was that something that was on your mind or you felt bad about the rest of the game?
Que si le diste pensamiento, si te sentiste mal de lo que pasó.
No, me sentí mal. Yo salí a dar lo mejor de mí como siempre.
No, I was focusing on giving my best effort as always.
And for now, the Dodgers have made the right call on Walker Buehler as their ace. The symbolism was powerful. Buehler is the starter in Game 1 and, if needed, in Game 5. Not Clayton Kershaw. But it's doubtful this NLDS will go far enough to matter after Buehler went monster in allowing one hit with 8 strikeouts in the opener against overmatched Washington. The Dodgers are favored in the National League to go to the World Series, but still, they are not beating Houston. Amid powerhouses such as the Astros, Yankees, and Dodgers, it's very important for baseball that the low-budget, forward-thinking Tampa Bay Rays can cut through their inherent issues and somehow reach the divisional round. Tampa Bay has the lowest payroll in the sport at $63 million and averaged only 14,000 fans inside that soup can of a monstrosity in St. Petersburg, the only permanently closed dome in the major leagues. This is a franchise so weak, there are thoughts of splitting the season between Tampa Bay and Montreal, which creates a logistical mess like no other. Yet, on the field and in the front office, give the Rays enormous props for carrying on through the endless quagmire. This is their fifth playoff visit in the last dozen years, and everybody who thought it was about Andrew Friedman and Joe Maddon back in the day needs to wake up to Chaim Bloom and Kevin Cash, who were inventive enough amid their daily challenges to introduce the idea of an opener to start a game on the pitcher's mound, and now it's an innovation that everybody is copying, including the Yankees. We laughed at it a couple of years ago. Silly us. The laugh was on us. 8 of the Rays' 12 best players were acquired in trades or free agency in the last 16 months, including Tommy Pham, one of the heroes in the American League wildcard game, and also native Cuban Yandy Diaz, who was injured most of the second half. Then he returns to hit 2 home runs to quiet that large Oakland crowd. How do the Rays do it when so many teams with huge payrolls, including the Red Sox, miss the playoffs? How do the Rays succeed when messes such as the Mets, who fired manager Mickey Callaway, experience annual trauma? Answer: the Rays have more brain power than the others. And while I always make fun of the nerds in baseball, you know, meet the GM, first name Al, last name Gurrhythm, Al Gurrhythm, The Rays do deserve reverence because they have precious few resources, and they keep getting it done. You know what these guys do? They set up screens during batting practice so hitters think about launch angle and driving the ball deep, which, along with exit velocity, drive the purists nuts and only feeds the home run derby tedium. Yet that led to the series of home runs in the wild card game that eliminated the A's. Launch angle. And when their one luxury item, $30 million pitcher Charlie Morton, faces his old team, the Astros, later on in the ALDS, is anybody going to bet against Morton? Neither underdog, the Rays or the Twins, will disrupt the inevitability of Astros-Yankees in the ALCS, but both series will be competitive. Here's Yankee skipper Aaron Boone, who might be manager of the year, and how he kept together his injury-marred crew to win more than 100 games. But Boone still is going to be judged in New York on how he does this postseason. He is jacked to prove everybody wrong, though I don't see how the Yankees or anybody else beats the Astros.
Well, I don't think there's any question that some of those experience fueled them. We got ousted in the postseason is, you know, remember this feeling and allow it to be fuel to your fire. Pain and disappointment can also lead to a heightened sense of focus, and I've really felt that we've had that in spades from day one.
And can I say this about the A's? It's hard to call them heartbreakers when you don't expect all that much from the relationship to begin with, but with 54,000 plus in the Coliseum stands and what could have been a love-in, they lost their ninth straight winner-take-all game in the postseason and fell to 1-15 since 2000 in postseason games in which they would advance with a victory. Yep, I can see Billy Bean right now down in the weight room sweating it out. This is a bizarre franchise. They overachieve and underachieve all at once. Worse, this franchise was blitzed by a lawsuit yet again filed by the city of Oakland that jeopardizes the team's plans for a new waterfront ballpark. Might the A's finally just move to Las Vegas like the Raiders? It would be sad to see three teams leave Oakland, but the politics there are stifling, and I can't blame the A's at this point for getting up and moving, but just a warning, there's nowhere else to move other than Vegas. I think the suburb of Henderson might help build a retractable dome. You're going to need a dome in Vegas. It's too hot in the summer. I can't imagine this team sticking around in Oakland and making fans keep going to that ballpark, and then when they do show up in droves, the team lets them down. When California Governor Gavin Newsom signed a law allowing college athletes to finally make money from endorsements, sponsorships, and other uses of their names, images, and likenesses, here's how the NCAA should have responded. How can we help, Governor? That's the least the NCAA can do, as it generates over $1 billion these days in annual revenues. You know, let Trevor Lawrence get paid for a haircut ad. Let Zion Williamson do a shoe commercial after his sneaker explodes. Let Katie Ledecky accept sponsorship money from a Silicon Valley tech titan. Let athletes have money for their jersey and video game likenesses. Let a golfer help coach part-time at her high school. Let a lacrosse player be a social media influencer, on and on and on. But instead, true to its greedy self, the NCAA said it will continue to defend its quote-unquote right to have this glaring injustice inside its hypocritical house, forbidding athletes to be paid beyond basic room, board, and cost of attendance. And if California keeps pushing the Fair Pay to Play Act envelope, a crusade forcefully backed by a prominent Los Angeles lobbyist, you may have heard of him, LeBron James, then the NCAA is threatening fines, quote, potentially in the tens of millions of dollars, unquote, for California schools, which could cripple some of America's storied sports programs on the West Coast. Make sure we all understand what NCAA means. It's a reference not only to the nonprofit organization that administers student athletics, but also to the dozens of universities, the conferences nationwide benefiting from massive payouts via megabucks deals with TV networks that enable this mind-boggling imbalance. It's also important to make another distinction here. Nobody is saying, at least I'm not, that all college athletes should be paid. That would be impossible given the revenue-producing disparity between a Heisman Trophy candidate and, say, a wrestler or lacrosse player. And if you're paying every player on a football and men's basketball team, then Title IX requires athletes on women's teams to make similar amounts. Again, how is the money doled out and administered? The idea here in California is this: college athletes who have achieved a marketable status on a national or local level should be allowed to cash in. This way, they aren't as exploited by the college sports machine, and at least they feel they are getting a piece of the lucrative pie. But the NCAA is nothing if not ruthless in protecting its stinking rich kingdom. And already we're hearing the likes of Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith pushing back. In Smith's view, allowing even a minimal amount of pay for play makes college sports vulnerable to more sleazebags and dirty payoffs, as if that dirty activity isn't already running amok in basketball and football with, yeah, Ohio State among the programs nailed for violations. Come on, Gene, stop being a hypocrite.
My concern with the California bill, which is all the way wide open, monetizing your name, image, and likeness, is it moves slightly towards pay for play. And it's very difficult for us, who are practitioners in this space, to figure out how do you regulate that? How do you ensure that the unscrupulous bad actor does not enter that space and ultimately create an unlevel playing field? And we know that there's not a level playing field in a lot of different ways, but one of our principles is to try and create rules and regulations to try and achieve fair play. So how do you do that and ensure that the third party bad actor doesn't enter that space and ultimately drive some environments to a point where recruiting becomes an even bigger advantage than it is for some other schools?
And Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney says of the 100,000 college athletes in America, maybe 1 or 2% have commercial value. Well, Jim, not only is that estimate low, you conveniently ignore the fact that the most visible stars who drive the wealth of football and men's basketball have enormous commercial value. Did you check out Zion Williamson's social media presence last winter? Or did you check out Baker Mayfield's when he was at Oklahoma? Or check out any of the Heisman candidates this year, Jim? Let's keep this simple and honest. Allow athletes to do commercials and speaking engagements. Allow them money for video games and jerseys. Allow them to make money on the side as coaches and mentors. The law doesn't go into effect until 2023, allowing time for public discussion among the likes of Newsom, James, and NCAA Commissioner Mark Emmert. Until then, listen to LeBron speak eloquently about the plight of less privileged student athletes who might be putting 100,000 in the stands on a Saturday, with many wearing his jersey number only to see zero financial compensation for his prominence.
Because I was one of those underprivileged kids. Obviously, I was fortunate enough and talented enough to be able to skip college. But for sure, I would have been one of those kids if I would have went off to Ohio State or if I would have went off to any one of these big-time colleges where pretty much that 23 jersey would have got sold all over the place without my name on the back, but everybody would have known the likeness. My body would have been on the NCAA basketball game 2004. And the Sean Steen Center would have been sold out every single night if I was there. Coming from the from me and my mom, we didn't have anything. We wouldn't have been able to benefit at all from it. And the university would have been able to capitalize on everything. you know, that I would have been there for that year or two or whatever. So I understand what those kids are going through. I feel for those kids who've been going through it for so long. So that's why it was personal to me.
In less than 3 years, LeBron's son Bronny will be deciding his basketball future after high school. It's a safe assumption Bronny will not be playing college basketball unless he's paid. It's impossible to create racial peace in this country as long as the N-word is used as an insult. So when Penny Toler, general manager of the WNBA's Los Angeles Sparks, acknowledges using racial epithets in the locker room as she challenged her players during an intense obscenity-filled rant in the league semifinals, it is not acceptable behavior, even if Toler herself is black and says the epithets weren't directed at any of the team's players. Toler should be dismissed from her job for the very same reasons anybody else in an executive capacity should be dismissed for not knowing better, for using the N-word, but my guess is she won't be dismissed. The WNBA is a dumpster fire not long for the world, filled with confrontations and dissension, with one of the sport's biggest names, Candace Parker, quitting on a team coached by Derek Fisher only weeks after Brittany Griner punched and then chased an opponent down court. On to the NFL, where the Rams are not returning to the Super Bowl, losing a winnable game in Seattle when Greg the Leg Zuerlein missed a game-winning field goal. He used to be automatic, not anymore, and I think that miss is a metaphor for a fading team. Jared Goff continues to ebb and flow in situations where elite quarterbacks would shine. He had his moments in Seattle, but Russell Wilson doesn't make critical mistakes, and he's a killer in the clutch, and Goff remains a marquee moment novice. And there's still the Todd Gurley situation. Add all of that up, and I think the NFC is still wide open for the Saints, Cowboys, and dare I say, the Bears? The best Sunday drama is across the pond, where Jon Gruden is angry about Vontaze Burfict's season-long ban for a vicious hit and doesn't want to talk about why he traded Khalil Mack. John, aren't these two situations intertwined and indicative of why Gruden's 10-year, $100 million deal looks like the biggest flop in the history of coaching? Gruden kowtowed to Antonio Brown in another catastrophic mistake while showing no patience a year ago with Mack's contract demands, trading him to Chicago, which promptly paid him the jackpot he deserves, including $90 million in total guarantees. And on Sunday, count on Mack to wreak havoc on Derek Carr with a Bears defense that could carry this team far this season, even with a sluggish offense that won't have the hot and cold Mitch Trubisky. And that's a good thing, not having Trubisky. Gruden claims the Raiders wanted to sign Mack, but doesn't mention how they lowballed the best defensive player in the sport and then brought in Antonio Brown and let him walk all over them and then let Burfict come in and, you know, thug his way out of the league. Here was Mack, loving life in Chicago and ready to make Gruden pay inside London's Tottenham Stadium.
There might be feelings deep in your heart that you just can't let get to the surface. Is that what
absolutely, you're saying? Absolutely. There's feelings that you suppressed, but also it's no big deal to me, man. I'm here. I love the Bears, and we're going to go out and try to get this win.
Know how tough it is for Gruden these days? Listen to this former NFL analyst light into him.
Hits like that, which epitomize what the league doesn't want, should be punished. What about the Raiders, though? Antonio Brown, Vontaze Burfict, who's making that decision? I'm sure Coach Gruden assured everybody in the organization that he could handle those guys. Not. I'm just saying. Take care.
That would be, of course, O.J. Simpson. You may have heard of him. With Roquan Smith also returning for Chicago after a one-game sit-down that nobody has explained, calling it a personal matter, I have Bears 23, Raiders 6. Tampa Bay at New Orleans. Never thought Saints-Buccaneers would be a big one, and though I'm impressed by Jameis Winston, who has maximized Chris Godwin along with Mike Evans in the deep passing game, I suspect Winston still will have a Jameis Winston blunder or two against that impressive Saints defense in an early NFC South showdown. The Superdome helps as usual, and Sean Payton without Drew Brees has beaten Seattle on the road and Dallas at home. Saints 23, Bucks 20. Minnesota at New York Giants. Here is where Daniel Jones finally gets his first comeuppance against a Minnesota defense that will make the Giants pay for his mistakes. Kirk Cousins is lamer by the day, actually apologizing publicly to receiver Adam Thielen for misfires in the Chicago loss. A shoddy Giants defense will thaw those tensions. Minnesota 24, Giants 16. Green Bay at Dallas. The Packers and Cowboys are coming off bummer losses and playing at home. I say Dallas will rev up its offense against a Green Bay front seven that had no answers at home against Philadelphia's offensive line. Aaron Rodgers starts to reveal negative body language. That's not a good thing. Cowboys 29, Packers 22. Baltimore at Pittsburgh. What happened to the Ravens defense? Why can't they tackle anymore? Mason Rudolph playing like a quarterback who wants to create a QB controversy with Ben Roethlisberger next summer. We'll pick up where Baker Mayfield left off, and the Steelers do return to respectability, at least behind an improving defense that continues to slow the suddenly solvable Lamar Jackson. Steelers 23, Ravens 13. New England at Washington. This is no small piece of news. Steven Gostkowski is having season-ending hip surgery, meaning the Patriots could have kicking issues for the first time in the Belichick-Brady era. Veteran kicker Mike Nugent stepped right up into the Belichick pressure cooker. Gostkowski was so good he made Adam Vinatieri expendable way back in 2006. New England won't need a kicker or much of anything Sunday. If Tom Brady looked skittish in the pocket last week against a robust Buffalo defense, he will be cured against the horrendous Redskins, who should be firing Jay Gruden any hour so he can join brother John in Las Vegas next year. Lucky Vegas, huh? The Gruden brothers. New England is all about defense these days anyway, not Brady. Patriots 30, Redskins nothing. Jacksonville at Carolina. With the Gardner Minshew cult in full manic mode these days, the Jags are trying to fill their stadium with a two-game Minshew ticket plan. Game tickets, a bandana, a mustache, and a photo on the field in Minshew gear, all for the low price of $41 or a peak price of $600. Poor Nick Foles, huh? Minshew is human, though. And as he battles through a knee issue, I say the Jags become the latest victims of a Carolina offense that now belongs to Christian McCaffrey and his 629 yards from scrimmage. And yeah, Kyle Allen, too. And a very mean defense. Watch out for the Panthers. Cam Newton is no longer part of the equation, and they have a shot now. Panthers 26, Jags 16. Indianapolis at Kansas City. The Chiefs, who barely escaped Detroit undefeated, will have no such problems at home against a Colts defense that misses Darius Leonard and a Colts offense that misses T.Y. Hilton. Patrick Mahomes, whose TD pass streak ended last week, throws four more TD passes this week. Chiefs 34, Colts 18. Atlanta at Houston, a critical game for both teams, and because the Falcons have major problems defensively, Deshaun Watson won't have to peel himself off the turf the entire day. Big day for Deshaun. Texans 36, Falcons 24. Buffalo at Tennessee. Assuming the Bills follow concussion protocol, and not all teams do, Josh Allen will not play. And if Matt Barkley is the quarterback throwing picks all day, then Buffalo wastes another outstanding defensive effort in Nashville. Titans 10, Bills 6. New York Jets at Philadelphia. Sam Darnold still battling mono. Who was this dude kissing anyway? So the Eagles back on track turn the heat up on Jets coach Adam Gase. Eagles 34, Jets 13. Denver at LA Chargers. Melvin Gordon will be in the lineup, and I give him props for caring about his team and risking injury. The opposite tack of Le'Veon Bell last year in Pittsburgh. The Broncos are in a deep spiral with John Elway not long for the lead executive role after two more mistakes, hiring Vic Fangio as head coach and signing Joe Flacco to play quarterback. Losing Bradley Chubb is a killer. Thing is, the Broncos have dissension within the ranks. Owner Pat Bowlen passed away. His heirs are fighting for the power, like an episode of Succession. So I don't know who's going to fire Elway anyway. Chargers 27, Broncos 12. Arizona at Cincinnati. Somebody has to win between the Cardinals and Bengals unless there's a tie. And as ass ugly as Cincinnati was last Monday night, I like the idea of Andy Dalton, the redhead, summoning something more than the charlatan Cliff Kingsbury can do in helping the frustrated Kyler Murray avoid sacks and picks. Larry Fitzgerald, who should ask for a trade, calls the situation in Arizona depressing. Bengals 19, Cardinals 17. And Cleveland at San Francisco Monday night. ESPN finally gets a decent game on Monday night, or so we think, with the Browns traveling to play the 3-0 49ers. You're thinking Baker Mayfield, but I'm thinking Nick Chubb all night long, ripping off double-digit gains against a 49er defense that is no more ready for prime time than Booger McFarland. Browns 27, 49ers 17. On to college football, where the absence of an 8-team playoff and strategic scheduling leaves us with too many blah Saturdays. It feels like spring training as we see Heisman candidates pile up numbers against soft defenses. This week, the biggest drama is in Ann Arbor again, where Jim Harbaugh is one more ugly loss from the firing squad, if he's not on it already, and now he gets 14th-ranked Iowa. But quarterback Shea Patterson is markedly better at home than on the road, and I think Harbaugh survives at least until the Ohio State massacre. I don't think he's coming back next year. And maybe his brother, John, will hire him in Baltimore. The SEC starts to define itself when Auburn and its monster defensive line goes to undefeated Florida and gets a resume-boosting victory. Anything else? Yeah, maybe Michigan State and its defense stays in the game for a quarter or so against Justin Fields and the Ohio State offense. But Sparty has nothing offensively, and Mark D'Antonio is another coach who might not be long for the job. Anything else? Okay, Oregon beats Cal. Anything else? Because nobody cares about the Pac-10. No, nothing else. To the NBA, where Giannis Antetokounmpo is the league MVP for reasons beyond his transcendent play on the court. For the good of the Milwaukee Bucks and to eliminate distractions, Giannis says he will not be discussing his impending contractual status, which comes to a head next summer when he decides whether to sign the largest contract in NBA history, a five-year, $253.75 million Supermax extension with the Bucks, or become a free agent in the summer of 2021. Some people think the fact he's not talking about it is not good news for the Bucks. I say Giannis is just doing a good deed for that franchise, and if they do reach the NBA Finals, I think he does return and he signs that Supermax. Remember, he's from Greece. He doesn't need Golden State or LA. I think he likes it there. With the Eastern Conference theirs for the taking and the West no longer the domain of the Warriors, the Bucks can make his decision simpler. Just win it all, guys. If not, I suppose he might think about the Lakers or the Clippers or the Warriors. For now, I think he's just the MVP in many ways. I love this guy. And here is Giannis, who might not be the best player in the league. Kawhi Leonard does have rings, but he is on the verge of monumental things in Brewtown.
I feel like talking about my contract in a team that we have a chance in getting out of the East and playing the NBA Finals is disrespectful towards my teammate. And at any point in this season, I don't want to be disrespectful. I don't want to be selfishly talking about, you know, my contract. It'd be easy for me to go out there and say, okay, guys, let's talk about my contract. Let's please talk about it. But I do not want to do that. I do not want to take the attention out of where we need to have attention, which is daily improvement, getting better as a team, and winning games. We got to win games. If we do that, everything else is going to take care of itself. Contracts, all that, awards, all that is going to take care of itself. So I just got to try to stay focused on what is important right now.
The only Eastern team that can get in the way of Antetokounmpo is Philadelphia, and that's only if Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons learn from that devastating loss to Toronto in the East semis. Embiid took the advice of Charles Barkley and lost 20 pounds, making him less vulnerable to the knee issues that have slowed him at times.
Man, the main thing was, I just looked at myself, I'm like, okay, like the way I play basketball, you talk about a guy that's like 7-whatever foot, and being able to like play like a guard, like put it on the floor, like shoot off the dribble, or like do everything on the basketball court, basically. And then I just looked at myself and I was like, obviously, like I'm not heavy. Even before the 20 pounds that I lost, like, I'm not heavy as like for my size, but I just felt like my game to like take less stress on my body, I just felt like I just needed to get lighter so it doesn't put as much stress on my bones.
Without Jimmy Butler and J.J. Redick, the 76ers might lack the grit they need as Brett Brown remains on the league's hottest coaching seat. The Warriors might be happier without Kevin Durant. Think about it. Now, if they lose in the Western playoffs, they can say, hey, he ditched us. We tried our best. As I've said, don't sleep on them in May. They're not going to win a championship, but if you're Utah or Denver, the Clippers or the Lakers, do you really want to deal with Steph Curry, Draymond Green, D'Angelo Russell, and some form of a healthier Klay Thompson in a 7-game series? Green, of course, is confident of a 6th straight finals appearance, and Curry couldn't help but chuckle at a question of whether the Dubs are even a playoff team.
Oh, I laugh because that's, for me, that's obviously the goal, to continue to be competitive, have a championship mentality, but understand we're going to have to do it differently. A lot of new personnel, but we have talent and we have pieces, and you know the expectation is there for us internally. We have to put the work behind it to make it happen. At the end of the day, you know, I feel like we have what it takes to be that team that's, you don't want to see us on any given night, nor in the playoffs. And that's what we have to create.
And Coach Steve Kerr, whose first 5 years on the job included 3 championships and 2 runners-up finishes, is looking forward to this new identity, hunting instead of being hunted. He loves the idea of proving people wrong, even with Thompson not returning until March at the earliest from his torn ACL.
Well, I'm excited about it. It's different. It's a very different season. Every year is a different challenge, and the circumstances are unique. And this is such a dramatic change from where we've been over the last 4 years that I think it allows for more change, more internal evaluation. What can we do better? The new building is almost a metaphor for how we can approach the season. We've got a chance to reset some things. Anything that we feel like could improve our team, it's a great opportunity to start fresh on some things. And yet, you know, as I was saying to Mark, we'll rely heavily on our veteran players, Steph and Draymond and Loon, Clay, to, you know, kind of pave the way for the younger players. We want to maintain the culture that we've built, but we want to make sure our players are put in the best position to succeed. And the last 4 years, we pretty much knew exactly what that meant. We don't really know what it means this year. So that's why we have a lot of work ahead, but it's exciting. I'm looking forward to it.
And why is Damian Lillard ruining his reputation as the most grounded NBA superstar? Dame is in a rap war with Shaquille O'Neal, who released a track last week saying Lillard is not among elite NBA guards. Lillard is in that group, but so what? It's Shaq playing the fool, so what? But Lillard couldn't help himself up there in Portland, responding in kind with a Shaq diss. Listen to the Kobe tribute at the end. Of course, there would be a Kobe.
Dollar. He say the GOAT, I come for his body. Plan him cause he bought the copies. Should've just passed me the torch, I got no remorse. I beat him like Rocky. I fill the tank up with diesel. You jealous of me and I see you. Cause on this day, originals just can't fuck with this sequel. I'm new school, got new hits. Space Jam, not blue chips. Hangman, yo shoe shit. Dame six, I'm too lit. Big name, got big brand, but you corny. Gift bags get purchased. Every time you get horny, then they repo. Love you when you was in beast mode. Loki thought you was a cheat code. Know that you shoot for the cheap hoes. Shoot any work like your freak throws. Know you see my pockets deep, so you flexing ain't really a thing, bro. We both could be working at Kinko's. And Kobe, when you them rings don't owe.
If Kawhi Leonard and Paul George thought they'd be immediate rock stars here in L.A., well, they know better now about the landscape here. The Lakers are the predominant NBA team through and through based on generations of championship pedigree and Hall of Famers. And Kawhi first realized it the other day when he attended a Rams game and he was booed when his image went up on the scoreboard at the Coliseum. And George, he was booed at a mixed martial arts event at the Forum. Come on, the Clippers are still the Clippers around here until they win a championship or maybe four or five. And Zion Williamson sounds every bit his 19 years as he says his likeness on the video game NBA 2K20 is slow and not very good. Maybe they're trying to send him a hint. He says the slight will motivate him.
Listen, you know, my guy is not that good in 2K. That's okay. That's okay. he's slower than I would like him, but it's fine. It's weird though. Like, I'm on these AAU trips when you were younger. You're playing 2K like with your friends and your teammates. And you're having fun, but you know, like you slide over to the right or the left. And you start pressing a button like to switch teams, and boom, you're right there. You don't have to create your player. You don't have to do nothing. Your player is already there. And it's just like, man, I'm here. But I want to stay here for a long time. So just all this stuff just adds motivation to my fire.
Right now, I'm looking at Williamson's poundage. He's still a little heavy. Maybe he's been indulging in too much of that Bayou cuisine. Zion could hit the wall by Christmas and then maybe Ja Morant will be the rookie of the year. I'm not sold on Zion's first season in the NBA. You've heard me say it before. He's got a lawsuit against him. Again, he's 19. He seems to be heavy. He's been hurt a couple of times. This is worth watching. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, you work in sports radio in L.A., so you were in the middle of a first. The Dodgers hosting a playoff game at the very same time the Rams were playing on Thursday Night Football. What do you think the ratio of interest was? I say Dodgers 4-1.
Well, Jay, I think it actually timed out nicely. Because for me, I mean, I had two TVs going, one on each side of the room. And it just seemed like the Dodgers game in the beginning, you know, the Rams sort of were flat out of the gate, and the Seahawks weren't, and that kind of allowed me to pay more attention to the Dodgers game. And then as that became, let's just say, it kind of non-competitive, and you kind of knew it was in the Dodgers' hand at some point, the Rams started to do what they do, at least the last two games, make that comeback and make it interesting. And, I mean, from a drama standpoint, from a storyline standpoint, I felt the Rams game was much more compelling. But that's just one game, as we know. That's why the NFL is so amazing. We got another Dodgers game tonight. And, more baseball to watch.
And, Chris, what is your take on a general manager, Penny Toler, using the N-word while going off on her players in a locker room tirade?
I mean, there's no take on it other than don't use that word. That's pretty much it. I think that's pretty much the rule. Isn't that the rule of life?
And, Chris, the state of California is a forerunner in marijuana legalization and perhaps paying college athletes. Now, this is a complicated issue. You cannot create jobs for some athletes because Title IX would require jobs across the board to all college athletes. But there's no reason the NCAA cannot allow players to make money off their names and likenesses if they become big enough in college sports. Yet, true to form, you've seen it, the NCAA is not budging, and the NCAA is threatening to rub out all sports programs in California, including those at USC and UCLA. Chris, where do you think this is headed over the next 3 years?
It's a catastrophe in the sense of it's a very similar thing to marijuana and weed, because you have states that it's legal, but federally it's not legal. So you run into all kinds of issues, that not only from traveling with it, but banking issues and financial issues. And it's something that is going to be a disaster, because here's the thing. How can you even do that? How can you have some athletes being able to do that in some states? But what if it just doesn't make sense? It doesn't make sense. And then think about this. If other states don't allow athletes to do that, college athletes, you're talking about one state that does. And let's be honest, California is not exactly the California universities aren't exactly pumping amazing sports out right now. I mean, what's USC, UCLA, Cal, if you will, it's just not, they're not the top tier in any sport, at least the major ones. There might be ones I don't know about at this moment, Jay. But think about it from a recruiting standpoint now. Now that kid on the Southeast who always dreamt of going to Alabama or Florida and was getting recruited by those schools probably since he was in eighth grade at this point, now maybe USC looks a little more interesting. UCLA looks a little more interesting. Cal looks a little more interesting, because if he's recruited and he comes here to this state where I'm at, where you're at, California, and he can use his likeness, and of course some booster for USC who happens to own a business or owns a car dealership or something says, hey, we're going to let you endorse this. It's just, it's so complicated. And the NCAA will save itself so many headaches if they just figure out a widespread rule that allows players to use their likeness and their image. That's it. Done. Then doesn't matter what Gavin Newsom does or any other governor does, but they're going to be stubborn. Then other states, other, if you will, left-leaning states are going to get involved. Not that that left or right shouldn't have anything to do with this. It's just, it's going to be a spider web. And it's going to be horrible, Jay. But get ready, because this is what we're going to hear about. The backwards NCAA not wanting to pay minority, low poverty level kids. That's really not allowing them to make money for their families. That will be the tagline used on the NCAA now.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. The NHL season begins with labor peace, increased scoring, seven coaches in new positions, and a come-from-nowhere champion in St. Louis, where it's time to turn off Gloria, Gloria, and try to become a rare repeat champion. I say it will not happen. The Blues played a demanding style through 26 postseason games, and they have been overcoming injuries all summer amid their celebrations. I'm looking at two teams better than the Blues who were burned by a hot team in the postseason. The Bruins, who somehow lost in Game 7 of the Finals, remain hungry with Patrice Bergeron, Tuukka Rask, and Brad Marchand peaking out, getting up there in years. Yet young talent in the ranks, and David Pastrnak, Jake DeBrusk, and Charlie McAvoy ready to thrive. Then there's Tampa Bay, which conked out in the first round against Columbus after one of the dominant regular seasons in NHL history, but that team's still loaded with skill and the league's best goaltender in Andre Vasilevsky. Question is John Cooper the right coach for the job? In the West, Vegas was burned by the officials in Game 7 against San Jose, but the Golden Knights will be back with two great lines led by Mark Stone, Paul Stastny, and Max Pacioretty, and a goalie, Marc-Andre Fleury, who already has carried them to the brink of a Stanley Cup, as long as he doesn't start to burn out at age 35. I like Boston and Vegas in the Cup Finals, with Vegas winning it all and creating a sporting first, a parade down the strip. And I think we should have each of the musical acts at each of the hotels and the casinos stepping out onto the strip in singing or dancing or doing whatever. Isn't this a great idea as the parade moves on? Just one request, Wayne Newton, stay home. Wayne Newton's still alive, right? And just when you thought you'd seen the last of the Mannings with Eli's demise amid Daniel Jones mania, here comes Arch Manning. The son of the oldest Manning brother, Cooper, Arch is burning it up as a freshman starter at the same New Orleans high school where Peyton and Eli played. And as much as patriarch Archie Manning wants to let Arch be a freshman, Arch already is being recruited by Ole Miss and Tennessee, the two schools where the three Manning quarterbacks played. Can we let this kid grow up, please? Our pathetic U.S. men's soccer initiative continues to lock into inferior competition within the CONCACAF Nations League. Did I get that right? With Mexico and Costa Rica. The thinking goes it's easier to qualify for the World Cup that way, forgetting that the U.S. didn't qualify in 2018 anyway. In the process of playing this inferior competition, America never gets better because it avoids the powerhouse likes of Argentina, Brazil, Germany, Spain, and Italy. So as deposed U.S. coach Jurgen Klinsmann points out, it's just a vicious circle where America never will improve globally because we're just trying to get by and slide in. He also said U.S. phenom turned Eurobust Christian Pulisic, who is struggling for playing time with Chelsea, has to start getting nasty, his word, in the Premier League. Why do I bother talking about U.S. men's soccer on this podcast? It's always depressing. And have you noticed how Rory McIlroy is trying very hard to anger European golf officials? He grew up, of course, in Northern Ireland, but after moving to Florida in 2013, blowing off the Olympics in 2016, marrying an American girl in 2017, opting out of hosting the Irish Open in 2018, and planning not to renew his European Tour membership, well, it's pretty clear McIlroy wants to play for the United States in the Ryder Cup and other international competitions. And with 5 years of residence in this country and 3 years of marriage to an American, Rory will be able to successfully apply for American citizenship. But the question is this, not to sound xenophobic, but when we're long accustomed to McIlroy as a Euro in these competitions, his brogue included, do we even want him playing for the U.S.? And what if his presence pushed a true blue American native off the Ryder Cup team? We got Rory McIlroy playing for the U.S. His defection is a fascinating story, and it would help the U.S. while weakening Europe. Still, I'd prefer McIlroy just play for his native continent. Thank you.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
Here in the fake news era, and in my mind, that's not just a Trump term, I use it as well, media people often are scorned as scum. And certainly, as in other walks of life, my profession is filled with its share of charlatans and liars who deserve to be excoriated. But I would like to point out that many in the media are conscientious human beings trying to do honest jobs. Before Sunday, Derek Gould was known as just that, a highly credible, hardworking beat reporter who covers the Cardinals for the Post-Dispatch in St. Louis. That was before Gould, a former Eagle Scout and lifeguard who is trained for life-threatening situations, performed CPR on a videographer who collapsed in the visitor's dugout on Sunday, helping to save the life of 64-year-old Mike Flannery, who had suffered a heart attack and a stroke. This happened just before Cubs boss Theo Epstein announced he was firing manager Joe Maddon, and suddenly none of that mattered. The story of the day was Gould, yet his deed received about 1% of the attention paid to the Maddon story. Next time you want to rant at a sports media person because you don't like what he or she said or wrote, or because you lost your bet, or because you had a bad day, think about Derek Gould and put away your damned phone. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.